It's week five of the West Side State Legislative Candidate Forums, and this evening, we meet the candidates running for the 68th State Assembly District. Before I introduce those candidates, I'll give a rundown of what the territory the district covers. The 68th is comprised of the southeastern corner of Chippewa County, the eastern portions of Clark County, the eastern half or so of Eau Claire County, and small bits of Taylor and Jackson counties. The larger municipalities within the 68th are Lake Halley, Augusta, and Fairchild. Now that that's all laid out, let's begin with the West Side 68th State Assembly Candidate Forum. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined in studio by the candidates. And first, I'll introduce Republican incumbent Kathy Bernier. Ms. Bernier lives in Chippewa Falls and was elected to the Assembly in 2010 and has also served as Village of Lake Halley trustee. Kathy Bernier, thanks for being part of the forum.
Thanks, Rich. Actually, I live in the Village of Lake Halley, which is why I was a trustee, not in Chippewa Falls.
On your voting address on...
It's a Chippewa Falls mailing address, but it is the Village of Lake Halley.
It's a crazy part of... Okay.
Yes.
All right. My apologies.
I might offend Tom Larson if I claim to be a representative of Chippewa Falls.
And next, I'll introduce Democratic challenger Judy Smriga. Ms. Smriga lives in Thorpe and is a retired teacher who spent 40 years with the Thorpe School District as a middle school science teacher and has also been a small business owner. Judy Smriga, thank you for being part of the forum as well.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Our pleasure. And I'd like to invite our listeners to be part of this program, be part of this forum, by calling in. It's your chance to ask both candidates direct questions or share your thoughts. To do so, call in. The number is 1-800-228-5615, or you can post your questions or comments on the West Side Facebook page. We've got three lines wide open waiting for your input. And I'll start off the program, I think, tonight, as we have in the past, with basically a kind of a quick bio and a reason for why you're running. And I'll start with you, Judy Smriga.
Thank you. I am a teacher, as you said, and I originally grew up in the Hammond, Indiana area and graduated from Indiana University and moved to Wisconsin because of the values of education, jobs, and the beauty of the state. And this is where we wanted to raise our family. I've taught in, like you said, in Thorpe for more than 40 years, and I've been a public servant in that position, and feel that it's important that as I move on to another phase in my life that I decided I would continue with being involved in the public eye. There's a lot of things that I think I can offer the constituents of the 68th. I also was being pushed by my two grown sons. They said, "You've been talking about politics forever, Mom. It's time for you to step out of your comfort zone and step forward and do this." And so here I am today.
All right. Thank you for that. And Kathy Bernier, the voters might know a little bit more about you, but please, for those who don't, give us a quick bio and why you're seeking a second term.
I was born in Eau Claire, raised in what was the town of Halley, now the Village of Lake Halley. I've lived in the Chippewa Valley all of my life. I have three children and six grandchildren. And I was the elected county clerk of Chippewa County for 12 years, so that was very helpful in understanding a number of facets in government, different areas of government. So, but the reason why I ran, because I didn't really like the direction that a lot of our policies were going at the state level, and I wanted to do what I could to have a voice in that for my kids and my grandkids. And I've had two children unemployed, now underemployed, and encouraged one to go on to school, currently three semesters out from graduating from UW-Stout. And my daughter has prerequisites done, but she's got to pay some bills off before she can go back to RN training. So education is very important.
It is, and the bills, we are those of us who have been through it are no stranger to the bills that come with the education.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to start off, and now we'll start off with the questions with you, Kathy Bernier. You've mentioned that you specialize in election laws, and you were involved with that as a county clerk or as a mm-hmm. clerk. You were a primary sponsor of Assembly Bill 7, now known as the Voter ID Law. And since its introduction, the voter ID requirement has been a bit controversial among some groups, and now it's held up in court and likely won't be in effect for the this year's November elections. Why do you think there's such opposition to this idea?
You know, I'm not sure why there is. You know, county clerks are some Republican, some Democrat. We had talked about voter ID for quite some time. Most everyone accepted that as kind of a matter of fact. And a lot of poll workers and municipal clerks, I was helped with the Clerks Association in Chippewa County, we expected voter identification in part because it was a way to verify that the right person was voting, if not because we expected there was some sort of fraud, to verify that there wasn't an error. And it's much clearer to a poll worker when you set your ID down, your spelling of your name, your address most often is correct on there. And it is a way to double check and verify. Because there's nothing more disconcerting to disenfranchise a voter because there was an error that they have more voters or the wrong voters at the end of the night, and they have to make things balance out. They have to pull ballots out. Now the error might have been on the poll worker. The error might have been on some sort of fraud. But the fact of the matter is it might be your vote that was pulled out. And so I think it's a satisfactory thing to ask is for identification to be provided. In some states, they have, even if it was a voter ID card, would be fine. But most states have pre-registration. And since we have Election Day registration, it is even more important to really verify that person, who they are, and where they live.
And, you know, one of the arguments for voter ID is because it makes people accountable, it makes the elections a little less prone to maybe fraud. But the folks on the other side will say that voter fraud happens so rarely that this is unnecessary, that this is really about keeping a certain segment of the population, which might not vote for your party in particular, out of the polling places.
I disagree with that. You know, Representative Zamarripa and Representative Kessler from Milwaukee, they came to my office and we talked about this, you know, and that there is bipartisan conversations going on. And I said, you know, Representative Kessler, I just want you to know that your folks, in your district, there are African Americans will be disenfranchised. I said, how are they getting jobs without an ID? How are they getting into the bar without an ID? And, you know, he gave me some, you know, excuses that they know everybody in their community and all that sort of thing. And I said, look at it this way. They're going to get a free identification card that they can use to get a job and they can use for other purposes. And so that's really kind of a sideline plus. So I think it's a positive thing because there has to be some personal responsibility, not only in getting a library card, but, you know, exercising your right to vote. And I think that we need to step up to the plate and show a little personal responsibility. And in regard to your comment in regard to the number of people prosecuted is small compared to the number of ones that are suspect that they can't find. And there's a lot of problems and a lot of poll books where they can't find the person that voted. They don't actually reside where they said they do.
All right. And Judy Smirka, are voter ID laws meant to keep minorities and low-income people from casting ballots, in your opinion?
I think there's a problem. I can understand, and I'm glad to hear that you had that bipartisan conversation. I think we need to increase those as we go along. Yes, I do feel there's some problems, even with senior citizens. For example, I know that in the Thorpe area, there was a woman who just had moved to assisted living and went to vote in a primary. And she's lived there her entire life, and she wasn't allowed to vote because her address wasn't correct. And by chance, her daughter was with her, and she said, you know what, I just ordered some checks. I'll go get those. So this is somebody who's lived in the area. Everybody, like you were saying, know her, and it poses a problem for seniors. It also poses a problem. In order to get that ID, you have to have a birth certificate. And if you don't happen to have that, there's a cost involved in getting your birth certificate. You know, I think the percentage of fraud is tiny. I don't know that this is really what we should have been working on primarily in this last session, because we needed to really concentrate on jobs.
Now, I'd like to follow up with you, Judy Smriga. But is it the fact, you know, people say that the incidence of fraud is low, but isn't the fact that we don't know because there's no proof of who a person is? I mean, wouldn't that be, how do we know if voter fraud is a problem if ID isn't required?
I guess, you know, you're saying that they pulled out, I guess I should be saying. I think it could be a problem. I think the percent is so small. You know, the other thing is university students, they're concerned, too, as to what ID they can use, and I think that's starting to get straightened out. I think we need to look further into it. I don't think that we can have an answer right now. Maybe this is something that needs to be taken care of, but it moved fast, and we need to make sure that everybody still has the right to vote. That's why we live in the United States.
And Kathy Bernier, on the same, we'll move to another subject, but I wanted to ask you, do you think that people that are against the voter ID laws, do you think they're in favor of making it easier maybe to squeeze some extra ballots in under the table or something?
Not necessarily squeezing ballots under the table, you know, in the southeastern part of the state. And remember, when you create a law for the state, it has to apply to everyone. In our little communities and neighborhoods up here, not as much of a problem, although I do understand that there was an individual who took the poll books and went around to certain areas in Eau Claire. And found that there were people that said they lived there and there was nothing there but a vacant lot and a number of other instances. And there's documentation of that, actually. But you can't prove and you can't prosecute someone you cannot find. So is it a problem? Yes. Is it a huge problem? We don't know. But what percentage is satisfactory to you? If five people voted illegally in your ward, and that might have disenfranchised and negated your vote, what's acceptable? We need to make it as safeguarded as possible for everyone's vote. And when we know that there has been fraud, and we've caught some, and this isn't something that is that moved fast. This has been discussed for many years already.
Right.
So it didn't move fast. It was a long, drawn-out discussion on both sides of the aisle for a long time.
And with that, we'll shift gears, and we'll go to the phones for the first caller of the evening. And we do have full phone lines, but folks, keep trying. You can call in with your questions or comments for the candidates. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. If you can't get through, give us a try on our Facebook or Westside Facebook page. Leave a question or comment there on our wall. Now we go to Thorpe, and Cindy is on the line. Cindy, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind? And I think we lost her. Cindy, try back if you get a chance. Now I guess we're going to speak to Deficit, and we'll go to Eau Claire, and Dave is on the line. Dave, are you there?
I sure am, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your thoughts?
I have a comment and then a question for Ms. Smriga. You know, our national debt exceeds $50,000 per resident. Our state debt, I think, is somewhere around $21 billion. You know, I know you're not covering Eau Claire, but Eau Claire has well over $1,000 debt per resident. We're just teeming in debt. We had a $3+ billion structural deficit. Governor Doyle tried really hard to get concessions out of the unions, got nowhere. Even during the lame duck session, when the Democrats controlled the legislature and Governor Doyle was still in power, they tried to ram through a contract. So obviously the unions weren't willing to negotiate. They weren't willing to give up anything. It was 8 or 9 days into the protest when they got to almost 100,000 people before they finally stepped forward, and only did when they could see that Governor Walker and brave souls like Kathy Bernier were willing to stand up to the unions. So in context of what I've just said, Ms. Smriga, how would you deal with a $3+ billion deficit?
All right, Dave, thanks so much. Judy Smriga.
That's a good question. I think we need to look at our deficit. But I don't think we should be putting it on the back of education either. there's lots of different ways we maybe should be looking through it. We took money away from schools. We need to keep our strong public schools. I don't believe that we've done that. We need to make sure that we're getting jobs going. There were 63 job bills that were left on the table at the end of the session. We need to think about budget priorities. Let's look at our priorities, and maybe we can bring things down. Taxes is a concern for everyone, whether we're Democrats or Republicans.
Dave, are you still there?
I am. I really didn't hear any line items or any plan in all of that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dave, and we'll leave it at that. And Kathy Bernier, would you like to chime in on this? I imagine you would.
I would. You know, you have to weigh out priorities, and education is a priority, along with Medicaid, Badger Care, senior care, family care, which is half, more than half, 70% of human aid budget and education budget is 70% of the total general purpose revenue. So it is a priority, and it was shared among everyone, because at some point in time you have to say we got to stop passing the buck off to and you know, I kind of tongue-in-cheek said, you know, I think this is why Governor Doyle decided not to run again, because he knew that we had stimulus, $1.7 billion of stimulus money. They took out general purpose revenue out of Medicaid. We had to put as much back into that, or we would have had to kick people off of senior care. We would have had to kick people off of Badger Care. And then we had to have some help from government employees, including us elected officials, to help pay some of our own benefits so that we could afford to provide for everyone as much as possible. It was not an easy task. We didn't take it lightly, but it had to be done.
And Judy Smirga, you'd like to respond?
However, there was money that was taken and given to privately owned voucher schools that we do not have voucher schools in the Chippewa Valley. Those are profit. Those are schools for profit. And I know that money went to Ms. Bernier's campaign work through different kinds of things. She received money from the private voucher schools to help her with her campaign. Also, there was money that was spent for special interest groups, like breaks to junk mail. No, I don't like junk mail in my mailbox, but they got a break. We also, there was tax breaks to businesses if they took jobs and sent them to China. So we need to keep Wisconsin strong and every part of it, education, jobs, healthcare.
All right. And a response?
Voucher school did not affect the funding in our own school districts. That voucher school program is within the school districts down in Racine and or Milwaukee. That does not take, and I had that verified by the Fiscal Bureau, that does not affect our funding. And they needed choices. And I've been right up front telling people I'm in favor of school choice. Now, 9 out of 10 times, my choice will be my public school. But I had one child who needed special needs, he's not cognitively or developmentally disabled, but he was ADHD, and he had some issues, and I wanted to send him to the alternate school. Now, that's still a public school system, but I was told no. I was told no, they didn't want him there, and so I begged until it was so late that he couldn't catch up on his credits. But he flourished. Once he was sent there, he flourished. And he passed his GED with great grade. You know, it was outstanding. Very intelligent young man. But I want options for parents who are in the position where this school is not giving them what they need for their child. And who knows best than a parent who is trying to get their child an education in any way possible.
All right. And with that, we'll pick up on education when we return. This is the Westside 68th State Assembly Candidate Forum with Republican incumbent Kathy Bernier and Democratic challenger Judy Smirga. If you want more information about these candidates or others, check out wisconsinvote.org. That's your source for the 2012 election information. We'll hear more from our candidates, and like I said, we'll pick up on education. We do have a couple callers on the line. Hold tight. We'll be right back. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side 68th State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm joined in studio by Republican incumbent Kathy Bernier of Lake Halley and Judy Smriga of Thorpe. And we want you, the listener, to be part of this conversation as well. To do that, call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-228-5615 or post on Facebook. We've got a West Side Facebook page waiting for your input. Now, we're just touching on education a little bit, and I want to go to Judy Smriga. And you have been a teacher for many years. You recently retired as a middle school science teacher in Thorpe after 40 years in the profession. The cuts that were made to state aid, do those hurt the quality of education in our state?
Yes, I think it does. I can speak for maybe the Thorpe district. I know that we had teachers that were not replaced. We have more part-time teachers. Class sizes have grown, and more is being asked of teachers because we have new programs coming in, which are important to children. But when you're having a large class, it's a lot of time to meet their needs. There's also materials. You know, those prices go up just like gasoline does, and we need to make sure we have those. And so I think small districts have a difficult job. Some of them are hanging by a string, and we need to be able to support those small schools in the small communities that make up the 68th. It's very important that we keep them. There's also, I had talked to a parent in Altoona who said that her son was no longer going to have art class, and he loves art, and that was kind of an outlet for him, and they had to cut that. I think we need to remember we need to keep a well-rounded student so when they go out into the world that they can find the job or profession or hobby or whatever their needs are, because they need to have those skills to become an excellent Wisconsinite, just like we all are.
So if elected to the state legislature as the representative for the 68th, would you introduce legislation or would you push or fight to get that funding back, the hundreds of millions, I think, that were taken from state aid?
I think it's important. I think we need to keep our schools strong. That's what brought me here originally, was because of the strong schools. And that's why I stayed in this profession, because, in fact, we're finding that there's not a lot of young people that even want to go into the teaching profession, and that's wrong. In the district of Thorpe this spring, we had not one senior who had an education plan. So I think we need to show that education's important here, and we need to have that so that we can have good jobs and be able to support families.
All right. Now, Kathy Bernier, you and your colleagues in the state legislature overcame the $3 billion-plus deficit last year when crafting the 2011-2013 budget. And a large part of that came from cuts to state aid for K-12 and higher education. Do you believe that cutting that money has hurt public education?
Well, overall, everyone in our country, in our society, in our state has had to do more with less the last 4-5 years. Mm-hmm. And so it is difficult but possible to do with more with less. You know, you get accustomed to doing something a certain way. That's the way you do it until you start thinking outside the box. Now, granted, we gave the schools, you know, my neighbor is actually a superintendent of schools, and I had a long conversation when I was in his neighborhood with him. And he said, you know, Doyle cut us and nobody said a word. Mm-hmm. He said, at least now that, you know, the Walker administration, we cut them, we gave them tools to work with. And so he appreciated that. Does he want to see some funding changes with the funding formula change, a number of other changes? They can't, you know, take on a whole lot more. That's true. And I'm hoping that some of the actions that we've taken with jobs, some of the actions that are going to be taken at the federal level, which will help us increase our revenues in order to ease the pain a little bit. But I'm not going to make any promises for the next budget. Right now, our revenues are projected to be up a bit. And education certainly is a priority and will continue to be considered that. But everywhere along the line was approximately about 10% reduction on just about everything. We had to still make up a almost $500 million deficit in our Medicaid as well. So mm-hmm. It's been difficult, but we had to keep focus on jobs and what we can afford. And a lot of those jobs bills meant additional funding, and you can't push the envelope quite that much.
What about education as the modus operandi? Maybe I didn't use that right, but jobs, education is as a jobs creator, you know, through educating the students and higher education tech colleges. That's been an argument that I've heard from the left, that is the way to create these jobs.
Well, we've done that for about 30 years or 40 years or whatever. We've put as much as we can into education. We have an extraordinary large education system in the state. And I was just at the Board of Regents this morning. Mm-hmm. And in 1988, UW-Stout had 7,500 students. They are now at 9,000 something per semester, 11,000 a year. So as you grow a business, your expenses also grow. And so that's what we've seen for a number of years now, where things keep growing and growing and growing. And at some point, you're going to lose the ability to be able to continue to fund as that continues to grow. So we need to look at all of that. But right now, the employers, we lost our focus somewhere in the education system the employers that we have now that need employees are in the technical, the tech area. And we don't have enough educated people in that area. We've pushed them all to four-year degrees rather than giving them options and talking to them about some sort of trades. And so we don't have welders. We don't have enough electricians. And so we need to step back, take a deep breath, and take a look at what it is that our employers need. And it almost has to happen simultaneously with our education system, so we need to be flexible. And we'll be looking at giving non-traditional students, the ones that have been in the work field, some ability to create credits, to test out of things that they have experience in, utilize some credits that they earned previously. And so we're going to be addressing all of that.
Can All right.
Make a comment?
Yes, you may, Judy Smirga.
Well, I guess I'm concerned because money was cut from the tech schools. And we all know that in the newspapers in our area, there are jobs, but there aren't the people with the skills to fill those jobs. So when the money was cut, and I've talked with people at CVTC, and they said, we've had to cut back on our programming and the amount of classes that we can offer. And I agree. You know, not everyone is a four-year candidate. I have a son who was not a four-year candidate, and he ended up going back to school later in life. But I think we need that. We also need to be able to retrain, as you were saying, because we do have jobs that are changing or businesses that are closing. We have Pactiv in Chippewa that's closing, and we're going to have 150 people that aren't going to have a job anymore. Maybe they're going to have to go back for that training and get some new skills. So let's get that money back for the vocational schools.
All right. We'll go back to the phones now, and we're going to Jean in Eau Claire, and you're on the air. Thanks for holding on the line there.
Thanks for this opportunity. I have a question for Representative Bernier, and that is, do you remember when they were doing the redistricting and people who were involved, you know, in the redistricting maps and things and discussions signed a secrecy pact or a contract not to discuss, you know, this planning? Were you one of those people?
If you mean I did a client lawyer privilege kind of thing, yes, I did.
And with your background, do you think that was appropriate with, you know, the focus on open government, transparency, that type of thing?
You know, I didn't give it a lot of thought at the time. My conversation with that person, that lawyer, was not even significant. And as a matter of fact, there was nothing to keep secret. And I'll tell you right now, it was just a matter of what your district looks like now, what would you like to see it? And I said I was the county clerk in Chippewa for a number of years, and most of the people know me there. And that's about all I said. And I have some of Chippewa County, and, you know, I did end up with a different part of Chippewa County, actually. Did I like some of the things that one of the staffers was noted to say down there or whoever it was? I had little or no input in that, and, you know, I didn't care for the process, and I know that part of it was because there were a number of recalls going on. It was a very stressful time. So you can call it a pact. I thought it was a client, a lawyer privilege. I didn't look at it as a pact. You might want to call it that, but that is not what I saw it as.
And why would you need a lawyer, you know, to sign with a lawyer when you're working on redistricting?
I'll answer that.
All right. We'll
sorry. Thank you for answering my question.
Sure.
Thank you, Jean.
I will answer that. 10 years ago, the Senate was a Democrat majority and the Assembly was a Republican majority. Both houses had separate, different legal services with lawyers. It is, and I called the Legislative Reference Bureau on this because I wanted to know if this was highly unusual. And they said, no, it's not. They had separate lawyers. They talked to separate lawyers when they went through this process. So it isn't unusual. And they had separate counsel, one for the Democrat majority and one for the Republican majority. So, you know, I didn't question it.
And redistricting definitely is something that, you know, both parties, they through history, have changed these maps to try to benefit themselves. That's part of partisan redistricting. I guess, Judy Smriga, What about, you know, there's been some ideas floated of getting rid of partisan redistricting and letting a nonpartisan kind of a panel of, you know, retired judges or whatever come up with the lines.
I think that'd be a great idea. We also have a lot of computer programs that should be able to be used. When I first saw the map of the 68th and there's things that are cut around, I wondered what's the idea here, you know. Why isn't Cadott part of my district? I have all the rest of Highway 29 going all the way across. I think we need to look at it not as a partisan. I don't think we should be involved in it. I think we should go to some other source of helping us to redistrict when we have the next time in 9 years.
Right. And I think there might have been attempts to do that. But anyway, I'm not going to comment on that. So let's talk about transportation, and I'll stay with you, Judy Smriga. And I thought one of the things that I saw in a Wisconsin Eye interview that was interesting was your comment that you made on transportation funding, and that was that you supported the idea of toll roads in Wisconsin. Well, now, was that something that you had thought about and it was part of your platform, or was that something that you kind of had thought of just at that moment?
No, I'd been talking. Some people had talked to me about that, and I thought, well, that's a possibility. As you're traveling, and I've done a lot of traveling because I'm originally from Indiana, I've used the Illinois toll route, and with the I-Pass or whatever, or going across to visit my son in Boston, you've been able to use it. It's a possibility. It's something that I don't think there's a complete answer for at this time. Maybe we should be sitting down and talking about it. We need to think about our roads and our infrastructure, and maybe this would be one way to help to bring some money back to the state. This is a vacation state, and people do come up from Illinois all the time. So they're using that toll road from there. So why can't we continue on our main highway?
Kathy Bernier, any thoughts on tolls?
I have thought about that as well. There's a significant overhead with toll roads that has to be considered, and I have not looked into that. I mean, there's a whole building and infrastructure you have to put in for that along with staff and all of that sort of thing. And so when the payback is after the initial expenditures, we would need to know that as well.
But there have been, I remember seeing an article, and I think it was from the Journal Sentinel, that we're reaching some kind of a critical point with funding for transportation in this state because it's deteriorating, it's aging, and there's just so much work to be done. Do we need to change the funding models for, I mean, what needs to be done to get over that hump and make sure that we've got good roads locally and statewide for years and years to come?
And the reason the shortfall in part is because of the gas efficient vehicles,
right,
that we've had.
Less
gas tax money. And then, of course, when you get into the hybrids and the electric vehicles, you know, they're traveling on the road, but they're not actually paying gas tax. So the question, and there is a commission studying this, by the way, through the Department of Transportation. I will reserve any ideas I have. I'm kind of adverse to adding another different type of tax, you know, because, you know, we have all sorts of different taxes, call them fees, call them registrations, call them whatever. But there are so many different types of taxes that you're just adding tax on top of tax, and I'm adverse to that because there is administrative costs involved in that. So whether it's upping the general purpose revenue, whether it's upping registration, whether it's increasing the gas tax itself, whatever this committee comes up with, and you know, I'm all ears to find out. Now, they had talked about tax on that committee. They're discussing that you pay according to the number of miles you drive. And I don't know who's going to be the superintendent of that.
That would be an unfavorable herb. It would be a person that most know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, they would be in charge of monitoring people's mileage. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I think about, okay, who's going to turn their mileage back?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
There's probably ways to cheat around that as well. So I'm going to wait for their expert advice and see what they have. But I do know that we're not bringing enough tax in transportation revenue in order to keep up our infrastructure. And something, you know, must be done on that.
All right, and Judy Smirga, aside from the idea of tolls, which might be a hard sell among the public.
I think it's something we could look at and sit down and talk about. But I think we've got to come up with something.
Right.
I think there are some states, I know I grew up in Indiana, and you paid for your plate according to the value of your car at that time. So there was a graduated license plate tag fee. Maybe that's something that could be looked at. I think we need to look at it. Our roads need to be good. We travel them all the time, whether it's on the interstate or we're off on some country road by Thorpe. We need to make sure we have strong roads.
All right. We'll take our final break here for the Westside 68th State Assembly Candidate Forum. But tune in next week for a chance to hear from the candidates running to represent the 87th. We'll have Republican Mary Williams on the program and Democrat Elizabeth Riley on the program as well. And again, for up-to-the-minute election information, log on to wisconsinvote.org. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll have more of the Westside 68th State Assembly Candidate Forum with Judy Smirga and Kathy Bernier when we return. If you've missed part of the program tonight or would like to listen again, check out our Westside archives by going to WPR.org. Clicking on the West Side program link, and the archives will be right there at your fingertips. We've got years' worth of programs on, and also we've got the past four candidate forums, which are very interesting and enlightening. I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to the West Side 68th State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're joined by Republican incumbent Kathy Bernier and her Democratic challenger, Judy Smirga. And we'll go to the phones again with... And we've got Dave from Chippewa Falls on the line. Dave, thanks for hanging with us. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'd like to ask the candidates how they might work to restore a focus on working for the best interests of everyone in the state of Wisconsin and not just special interests and out-of-state money groups.
All right, and let's go to the incumbent first, Kathy Bernier.
Well, Dave, my focus always has been to work with what I think is in the best interest of my constituents. You know, the one thing that I'm sure that there are people on the other side of the aisle and folks that have contacted my office. I can think of a couple and I won't name their names. But, you know, they've told me, I don't agree with you, but this is what I want you to know. And I've been very open with them. I've also held a dozen listening sessions, one very well attended, and the other 11 were not so well attended, but a few people showed up, and my door is open. My door is open to the colleagues on the other side of the aisle, and if you ask them, they will tell you that I'm easy to talk to. I'm easy to work with. You know, it's been an extraordinary session. Extraordinary measures have been taken, and I think that we can get back to a more civil discourse and be productive for the interests of the citizens of the state of Wisconsin and District 68.
All right. And Judy Smirga.
Yeah, I think we need to be able to sit down and work out things and roll up our sleeves at a table and talk across it and come up with some decisions. That's what Wisconsin's about. We need to come back to our basic values. We don't need to have extreme measures. We don't have to have things that seem to be passed within a short period of time so that people don't understand. I think I agree with Kathy. We need to be open to people to come and talk to us. And having been a teacher for years, I've had people coming and talking to me all the time. And my door would be open also. I think we need to make the state back to what we had, not back in deficit, but back where we are open, willing to talk, willing to solve problems.
Now, let me follow that up with both of you. I'll start, we'll stay with you, Judy Smirga, but special interests, the term is synonymous with elections nowadays. What about election campaign finance reform? What are your thoughts, Judy Smirga?
I think that's something that's really important. My campaign's a very grassroots campaign coming from hundreds of people from the 68th. I think we need to have people from Wisconsin supporting Wisconsin legislators. I don't think we need to bring in money from special interest groups outside of the state. We're working with Wisconsin. Let's keep our Wisconsin money here.
All right. And Kathy Bernier, with the collective bargaining and the recalls in particular, you know, the elections have been more and more money has been spent during these elections. And both sides had money coming from outside of the state through special interest or PACs. What do you say to the thought of campaign finance reform in our state?
Well, you know, everybody has a special interest, you know, if it's an individual or a group of individuals. But I was stunned on the number of different organizations, from Conservation League of Conservation Voters to whatever the case is, to school choice, to there's all kinds of organizations, and they have the right to, you know, be a group and bring in their concerns and whatever. And, you know, they often support the candidate that kind of falls along their line. My political science professor is sitting out in the other room, and he would tell you they don't buy your votes. They just want access to you and your ear kind of thing. But here's an out-of-the-box thought, and I've talked about this for some time. And apparently it's unconstitutional, but I don't know why it would be, because they limit us to $500 per contributor. So why couldn't we set, it costs $75,000 to run for an assembly seat, $250,000 to run for a Senate seat, $2 million statewide. This is your maximum amount you can run that you can spend. And we don't care where you get your money. Just you have to document where you got your money, but it doesn't matter where. But this is the most you can spend. And I know that's way outside the box, but I would like to see that happen. And it would limit the amount of money spent, although there's a lot of television and radio stations that would probably not agree with me because they're making money hand over fist lately. I would like to see something done. And I know we became a stage for the entire country in the state of Wisconsin because we were really thinking outside the box and trying to change the direction in which we have gone, where government spending has gone up and up and up, maybe a little, maybe a lot, but it's always gone up. And we needed to reel back a little bit and kind of fill in the gaps where the private sector was or has been for the last 4 or 5 years.
I'd like to ask both of you now, reminder to our listeners, we're getting close to the top of the hour, but we should be able to squeeze in one more call. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. I'd like to talk about frac sand mining because it's a big issue in our, in all of western Wisconsin, but especially the 68th. There's a number of frac sand mines under construction and already in operation. Judy Smirga, are you in favor of frac sand mining, and how should it be regulated, locally, or should the state have more of a hand than it already does through the DNR?
I think frac sand mining provides a lot of good jobs for people, and this is one of the things we've been talking about. We need jobs.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think we also need to regulate. We need to regulate air quality. We need to regulate water quality. And it's hard for a township when they don't have the equipment possibly to regulate that air and regulate that water. I think at some point we need some extra help here. That equipment is expensive, and we need to make sure that we keep our environment now and for the future. Water, if we have a problem with water, we're not going to do much about it. looted, we have problems. Mm. I think we need to, the state should step in and help a little bit with the regulation for environmental things. The jobs are fine. I think we need them.
And Kathy Bernier, the state does regulate, you know, through the DNR. The state has some some oversight over over permitting and whatnot. Does the state need to have a bigger role, or should it be left up to the governments locally?
Well, the state does have a role along with other agencies in regard to the air and water quality and the water permits.
Mm-hmm.
So the well permits. They already do that. They also have control via our land conservation departments with the non-metallic mining permit that requires them to have a reclamation plan, a runoff plan, and a number of other regulations that goes through our land conservation department. They're also bonded, so they can't walk away and not finish their reclamation plan. So if they do, each county has that bond that they can use to reclaim it. In talking with the Towns Association and talking with many local governments, they feel that they are fine with controlling the land use issues and the road issues that are their purview, and they're satisfied with it. Plus, we have Tom Willits, who has been especially hired and has the charge of dealing with the sand mine issues. And he has a pretty good grasp on the situation. I've had a number of conversations and conferences with public health, with the silica sand and the air quality and the ambient air and all of that sort of thing. Most of the good companies are step up to the plate to have those air monitors, and they even have special ones now. And there has not been a problem, but we are watching it closely. It always is, you know, deserves due diligence.
And this will probably be the final call of the evening, and we've got Brian from Fall Creek. Brian, you're on the air. Thanks for hanging on the line.
Hey, thanks, Rich, and thank you to both Kathy and her challenger. I just was wondering, you know, we heard about it a little bit in the debate last night, but as somebody who's, you know, kind of a constitutionalist, I'm wondering if you could each speak to the role you see in the state kind of battling it back against what I see is an overgrown federal government in the 10th Amendment, that, you know, the government that is closest to the people is the government that governs best, and how you know, Kathy, obviously already as a member of the Assembly, but your challenger, how, if she were to get in, you know, how are you going to defend the state of Wisconsin against the bloated federal regulations that come down on us so often?
All right, and let's start with Judy Smirka.
Good question. It's going to be a hard thing. You know, we do have our own situations here. We have our own laws. We have our own bills, whatever. I think we need to address those issues. I think the monies that come from the federal government need to be used properly. There are a lot of mandates that are put on the state, and it's hard to do some of those. So we need to be able to reach out and to talk across the aisle again. I think we need to solve problems, and that's an interesting thing, and I don't know that I have the answer. I am the newbie on the block, so, yeah, I think that's important.
Let me follow up with that, Judy Smirga, that a lot of the times there will be an offer of federal funds, and with those federal funds
there's
come
ties,
restrictions.
Yeah,
ties. What would be maybe be better off not taking that money, or?
Depends on what those ties are.
Sure.
Is it something that we can manage? You know, there's been ties back to education, and the No Child Left Behind, that whole situation. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, and I think we have to weigh each thing out separately.
All right. Kathy Bernier.
Well, what my mind went to right away, Brian, was, you know, the Medicaid dollars. And the only thing I liked about the Supreme Court opinion on Obamacare was the fact that they can't hold us hostage for our Medicaid funds. And I think the state of Wisconsin has done a fairly good job in providing health care coverage. And I just spoke to a gal in Augusta yesterday who had some suggestions. I asked her to email them to me, and I'll bring them forward to Department of Human Services. But if we had the latitude to take the Medicaid dollars, and when we say federal dollars, there are dollars. We paid them in. And so often, the state of Wisconsin, we don't even get what we paid in back. Once in a while, we kind of almost broke even, I guess. But, you know, give us the latitude to be closest to the people, to provide our our low-income individuals with the things that they need that we can provide here in the state of Wisconsin without strings attached by the federal government that, by the Constitution, as you know, Brian, are not even allowed to the federal government. And that is the far-reaching arm of the feds that we've seen for a number of years now, since, you know, if not the New Deal, the Great Society. And so we need to start reeling that back and saying, you know what, it's to the local governments, it's to the local school districts, it's to the state of Wisconsin and not the federal government.
All right, Brian, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks for the call. And again, that'll most likely be the last call of the evening. I want to talk about let's talk now about civility. We'll wrap it up with that, and I'll start with Judy Smriga. And the last year, there was a lot of just protests. There was a lot of threats to legislators' families. There was a lot of nastiness from both sides of the political aisle. Who started it, I guess, is the first of a question, and what do we do to repair that?
I don't know if I can tell you exactly who started it. I think it all started when we weren't working together anymore,
sure,
and it was starting to move along too fast. How do we solve it? We have to sit down. We've got to talk. We have to learn to listen to each other. Being a teacher, I had to listen to people all the time, whether it was the parents or the students or the administration or the school board. You know, and we had to sit down and talk it through. We can't get up and leave the table. We've got to sit down and solve these problems. And so civility is of utmost importance. This is something that I've heard at the doors. We've got to get Wisconsin working together again.
And Kathy Bernier, what is there a place that can be blamed or a source that can be blamed for causing the incivility? And how do we get back to where we were?
You know, I like Judy's analogy on we have to sit at the table, and it made me think about the 14 senators that left the state when she mentioned that. They left the table. And after that, everything was crazy. And so I think if they would have stayed at the table and talked it out on the Senate floor for as many hours as the Assembly. And I give my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, you know, it was excruciating to sit through 62 hours and 17 minutes of debate and, you know, discussion and whatever. But they did. They stayed there. They made their arguments, sometimes a little too excited, but they made them. And that's what we needed to do. And yes, things moved along quicker than I wanted it to as well. But you know what? When I had people in my office for 3 days straight filing in and filing out, telling me their concerns, letting them know and letting me know what they thought, I stood there for all 3 days and I did my best to listen to them as long as I could until I needed a break. And I was there to listen to them. And that's what we need to do.
All right. Well, that's our time. I'd like to thank both candidates for joining us this hour, Republican incumbent Kathy Bernier and Democratic challenger Judy Smriga. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I'd also like to thank Team Westside for being part of the program, including Mort Cypress for handling on-air production, Henry Lippold, Rebecca Rudolph, Courtney Holbrook for helping produce the show, Hannah Lagerman for promotions, and Molly O'Hearn, Grace Fair, and Dean Collenbeck for keeping this car on the rails. Next week, we invite Republican Mary Williams and Democrat Elizabeth Riley to the West Side for the 87th State Assembly Candidate Forum. And again, for up-to-the-minute election information, check out wisconsinvote.org. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week.